Well, here's a song coming your way right now. Nowhere to Run To by Martha and the Vandellas. Yes! Hey, you know what I mean.
Too much?
Welcome to Voices Carry Live. My name is Randy Scott. We are broadcasting live. I am broadcasting live to you. Welcome to from the beautiful village of Cary, Illinois. It is 7:34 on January 31st, 2005. Welcome, everybody. This is your podcast. This is an independent venture from me to kind of bridge the gap between social media and just knowing your neighbor and talking. I saw a need for it, and here we are. Turned a warehouse into a studio, and have a megaphone here for you. You can email us at voicescarry@proton.me. I gotta say, stop saying us. You can email me directly, or you can just comment below. I read the comments. Thank you for the constructive criticism and the compliments, putting wind in my sails. So that's nice. Thank you very much for that. I had somebody stop me today and ask me why. Why are you doing this? And it was his impression that I was doing this all because of a sign issue. And I said, no. I said, no, the sign issue is, that's where I planted the flag of, like, I need to do something for my kids to where they don't have to head these battles when they get older. So that's where this stems from, is looking after my family, and that in turn translates into your family as well, and yourself, and it, you know, I can't do it alone. So this is a team effort to where we got to talk together, and like I always say, talk with your neighbor. I always think about the home improvement, talking over the fence. Hopefully you can see your neighbor's face. If not, just the act of getting together and talking. Nice Friday some good info. Last show, I went over the Village Code, and because I had a few days to go on a family trip to the Kalahari Resorts in Wisconsin Dells, which is located in Sauk County, Wisconsin, in Baraboo, Wisconsin, and the city of Baraboo, this is their Village Code, Dunn & House, and this is the Village of Cary's Code, done with a $100,000 kickoff with a firm out of the city of Chicago, and is maintained through a service that we pay for. So it's got a lot of stuff in it. As Michael Scott says, you just got to crack this thing open, you know. So that's what we're going to dig into today. I have a video. It was from a committee of the whole meeting, which is like, which usually follows the board meeting. And it's back from October of 2015. And I really think that I found the moment of when we lost the reins, like the village lost the reins of Cary. There's a woman that I'm not sure, she's not on the board anymore, but she put up a few arguments to try to hold on to Cary, and she tried. And there she was. It's an interesting dialogue between the two, and I wanted to bring that to you right now, and then we can discuss about that. And I have some other supporting documents as well. So let's take a look. What they are talking about in this video is this was immediately following the comprehensive plan. The comprehensive plan is a document that the village paid for. We'll be looking at that after the video. That was $100,000 to be done by a company out of the city of Chicago, which has offices in California and another West Coast office. And we'll be doing a deep dive in that after the video. And then this specific, what they were talking about here was the code, whether or not to do it in-house. They wanted to reform the code. So they got the comprehensive plan done, which is pretty much laying out what the board goals. You'll hear that. Listen for board goals. What they want and where. And this conversation is about whether or not to pay $100,000 to the same firm for the code, this thing. Which both go hand in hand to make sure that board goals are met. We found it to where Cary slipped away from us a little bit. But not all hope is lost, because there is there's optimism here to where there's a path to where the village can see what they want in Cary again. And let's take a look at the video. So this dialogue here is interesting. I'm not sure the gentleman's name or the woman's name, but she was a board member, and then he seemed like a consultant. But listen for board goals, and we'll take a look at it.
There was no competitive bidding process for this project.
What I can answer, because I was here when this initial project was out for proposals back in 2013, initially the village board had the goal of doing the comprehensive plan and the zoning ordinance together in one large project. For a variety of reasons, cost being one, consumption rate being one of the meeting schedule, etc., the board in 2013, when it reviewed the proposals for the comprehensive plan, of which there were three, there was a what I'll call a sidecar proposal for the zoning ordinance that was a part of that. This project has grown in scope since the 2013 pricing was received. We do have a marker for what the zoning ordinance was in a vacuum in 2013. It was about $50,000 to $60,000 at that point. We've added now some scope to it with this unified development ordinance. some other side projects that the trustees had outlined, including the sign regulations and some of the subdivision regulations are additionally desired to be redone. And so that's additional project cost. So the proposals process in 13 was one aspect we looked at. And we did ask for a proposal from Houseel because they worked with us and completed this comprehensive plan project. We have not gone in isolation out to proposals for this scope. You can decide to do that. And there are pros and cons to that we could discuss.
Well, I mean, just given the fact it's almost $95,000, that's why I would prefer a competitive bidding process. And in addition to that, is there any part of this project that can be done in-house to reduce some of those costs?
I don't advise it. I believe that this should be done externally. Okay, Giants. I believe there are other priorities that we have that are more of a matchup to what John and Brian can do with the capacity time that they have outside of their normal assignments. I think this is in my experience, I'm not a proponent of staffing for peak. You get help for it when you need it. The zoning ordinance is an enormous amount of work, and it also, in my opinion, separate from the capacity of work standpoint in-house, I also like the thought of having someone hired externally that's a third party that can help us with some of the zoning conversations with some of the property owners. That's an independent of staff, independent of the village, bringing that market information to us. Those are some of my answers. I believe I mentioned earlier the 2015 code project, I believe is a better use of Brian and John's time. I've had conversations with trustees of late vis-a-vis economic development and goals of, all of you collectively in different ways, and concerns about as we have merged to the summer time frame, how are we doing on our economic development site visits and those kinds of things. I believe if we take on a big project like a zoning ordinance, we're going to be watering down some of the commitments that we've made to some of the economic development components that aren't negotiable. So I understand the concern about cost. I would view it as being not staffing for peak and bringing someone in with an expertise in this area. I also think that, as we know, tomorrow night the Maplewood committee is beginning their process, and as we learned from the comprehensive plan, from time to time when you have a planning firm that's helping you with a specific assignment in residence, in essence the comp plan in the past, there are projects that come in that you can get their input on, possibly including the Maplewood concept as part of it, and those are an additional cost. So I believe it's useful, especially the statement was made, we haven't done this since 1990. I think that it's a big enough project to outsource.
And to that point, if it hasn't been done since the 90s, if it weren't done, in the 10 to 12 month process, and it took a little bit longer, but it was done in-house, if we're talking about since the 90s, I guess my question would be is, what's the urgency that we have to pay $95,000 to get this done?
I get it. My answer to the question is board goals. And this has been a project where, at least from the standpoint of 2011, 2012, we had a 6-page list of goals that we broke down into years so that we could consume them and start checking them off the list. This has been punted a couple of times, primarily because the comprehensive plan process was invested in. And yes, you can defer. I mean, just as though the other board did. I mean, they decided that this was a secondary project. They felt the comp plan had to be happening first. We had that community look at things. So that's a choice the board can make. If you want to delay it, that's your choice. I would say do not do it in-house. I just absolutely don't believe that's a good expenditure of time in light of the staffing levels that we have. Carrie.
So she tried to save Kerry. There's a few things that I agree with him. I mean, getting outside help is good. But there needs to be a nice slice of humble pie. A lot of these you know, I would say it's safe to say over 90% of people are not in politics. And a lot of people are, like, they run unopposed. I'm going to show you, instead of just being on, holding onto a lap bar on a roller coaster in the town that you live, I want to put you at the control panel. So my way of thinking, I was like, how do I break this down? So I was like, let's back up to the plan that they approved. So I pulled the plan up and I started going through it. Pull it up here. This is a comprehensive plan for the Village Cary. And this was $100,000 to create. And it's 98 pages long. So it's a grand a page. It's a grand a page. So this cover sheet's a grand. This blank sheet's a grand. I got to about here. That's another grand. And then there's the old Nice Cary sign. Well put together. It's a carbon copy. It's where villages, cities, and this isn't just, you know, Cary. It's everywhere. Using data to morph towns into to where it looks the same, pretty much. And we lost the soul of Cary a little bit with this document. I'm all for growth. I'm all for, I think we need to pull the audience a little more. Going back to Regis Philbin days of Who Wants to Be a Millionaire. So this document, grand a page, what do we get out of it? Then I was like, okay, who made it? Haziel Levine out of Chicago. So I looked them up. I looked up, let's pull up their website. This is the firm that made our comprehensive plan and I believe our code. It's maintained by another service, but I think I might be wrong, but this, they went outside for this for a code, but nonetheless, this is who made our comprehensive plan. A company that is located in the city of Chicago, Los Angeles, and Seattle. So then I was like, okay, you know, they you know, look at floodplains, they look at, I'm like, this is good, using data. I don't have a problem using data. I was like, it doesn't feel like it's, you know, big data with like new world, you know, plans. And then I went down here and I saw this. This got my attention. The ESRI Partner Network Gold. And I was like, what is that? So I pull up that website and they specialize in a service called GIS, Geographic Information System. And then what is that? The mapping of data analysis technology that that's powering business decisions, supporting government operations, and quietly changing the world. That's comforting. And I'm going to show you. So there's a video on this website that I'm going to show to you, but I'm going to show you before that just how some examples of how they get data, because it is kind of fascinating. It's at the very least, it's mildly concerning, but it's also fascinating. And then it comes back to, why am I doing this? Family. Because once this takes a stronghold, and it's going to be, it's kind of the Wild West right now for data collection and how it's used, and nobody's really challenged it. And there's really no putting it back into Pandora's box right now. So what are the options? We have an option. I'm hopeful for this option. How do they get data? And all these are not specific to how this company gathers data. I want to be clear about that. It's just, how do they monitor traffic patterns and, I'll show you. Sensors. You'll see these on telephone poles. Some of these are for smart meters to relay information. Some of these are talking to your iPass, to your vehicle Wi-Fi that you can't turn off. Google Maps. They just drive around and take pictures, right? No, they there's something called a handshake. Like when your phone gets close enough to a cell tower, it does a handshake with it, says, hey, I can talk to you now. Transfers from the other cell tower. So Google Maps, and this is all about how they use data harmlessly for making communities, building communities, and a whole host of other things. But yeah, Google Maps, they don't just take pictures. They also do handshakes with Wi-Fi networks and probably other things. But so how does that equate to data? So they drive around literally every street. You have your Wi-Fi on in your house. That vehicle does a handshake, says, I know that this network is right here, right now. So there, now you have a location to your network. So now they have that information. So now when you're driving around with your Wi-Fi that you can't turn off, doesn't connect, like you can't use that person's Wi-Fi, but there's a handshake. It says, hey, I see you. I can't connect to you, but I see you, so that means that I'm here. So that's one way. You see these on restaurants. McDonald's is known for this model, like it's right by the drive-thru nationwide pretty much. Sam's Club, Walmart has Wi-Fi on pretty much all their outdoor. It's not for convenience. It's for, you ever get that like message, like when you're really close, it's like, hey, come on in. That's how that's done. And then also, smart meters, like, there was a big push for smart meters. It can monitor wave, like each device in your house has its own, like, waveform, so it knows when stuff kicks on. It knows microwave. It knows the difference. Now with Internet of Things, like there's more. This is stuff you're not supposed to talk about, like because, but it's all here. It all exists. So I'm not afraid to talk about it. So Internet of Things, like you have washer dryers that connect up to internet, thermostats that connect up to internet. And like I say, it's a wild west. So like all this stuff is out there. And once more consortiums get to use it collectively, they're going to have a hard time walking it back or just regulating it. And then RFID goes back to iPass. That's RFID. RFID is smart meters, gas meter. That's the one. That's the outside Wi-Fi routers you see on stores. You have RFID. What's RFID? So RFID is radio frequency identification. So it's pretty much a sticker. It's how your iPass works. So there's I'll draw it for you. And I'm going to show you the video. It's an interesting video of how they collect data. So RFID. So there's no battery. So how it gets its power from coils. So this is all metal that I'm drawing, really thin metal. And it's all connected to each other to make a coil. And it gets its power from a sensor. Kind of like this one. So RFID is pretty much on everything. I'm going to show you where it's being implemented. But this sensor talks to that, energizes this. There's a chip here with a unique identifier number. And it could be associated with you personally, or it could be to a product that you bought with a credit card, whole host of other things. So it energizes it, gets the information off it, a number. And I'm not saying this specific device is talking to that. I'm just saying it's an example. And then anybody who's just tuning in right now is like, what am I watching? So this is all just stuff, how they gather information to make decisions and build things, traffic flows. RFID, where is it? You'll see this. This is a new hot item. Kohl's initially ran this out. It stands for electronic product code. This is the unofficial industry logo. It's supposed to be used. You'll see this on the Kohl's when you walk into the door. And you'll see this printed on some products. For instance, this is a notebook from Walmart. And if you look here, right now they're pretty much just putting stickers. It got my attention because I'm like, why are you putting stickers on every one of your notebooks? But that's another conversation. It's just for inventory. So that's your electronic product code right there, EPC. And in here, you have that coil. These are some RFIDs that can be sewn into shirts, tags. And that's just a drop into how they collect data to make maps like this. And I want to show you the video of what this firm, they're part of this collective, this GIS. What is GIS? And we'll watch a video on it. And this is where it gets inspiring for me. This is where there was a gentleman in here that kind of gets it. And I'll stop it when he speaks, and I'll show you why it's why I'm optimistic about it.
What is GIS? Great question. Okay, let's start with just one of probably countless examples we could choose from. So suppose you live somewhere like I do here in San Diego, where we are getting more and more floods, and you want to know if your home's at risk. You would want to know, are you in a floodplain? What about drainage? How much rain did you get? How might that change in the future? When you start to combine and layer all this data with GIS, you can actually see how at risk your home is to floods.
It has very often said that data is the new oil, and GIS is a confluence of all of the different data sources that we have now, whether it's from the sky or from the ground or from mobile devices. Anytime it matters spatially how two things are related, and that's just about everything in this world, you need GIS.
Whether you've heard of GIS or not, it's all around us. It's used by every major corporation to manage their supply chains and to pick where to build stores. It's used by utilities. It's used by transportation companies. It's used by every governmental body. But it's also about what's happening in your neighborhood, what's happening in your community, which is why it's kind of remarkable that so few people know about it.
A community occupies a space in the globe, right? For a city, the city is responsible for that space, from land parcels to where our utilities located, to the conditions of the roads or the transportation system. All of that occupies the space. And so I really can't see a way to manage all that without GIS.
With GIS mapping, we can work much more closely with communities that have been marginalized for so long. It gives you this ability to problem solve with so much more information. If you think about people are living on this much money and they have this size of household and they tend to be working multiple jobs, low wage jobs, being able to see those layers gives you a different view so we can create a different future in those spaces.
In the GIS industry, some estimates are that it's going to double between now and 2027. Our clients use GIS in insurance to help understand risk. In agriculture, it's used to help farmers make better decisions about what to plant. We also see a lot of businesses looking at how they optimize their supply chains. You can look across your entire network of suppliers and make different choices to meet whatever your goals are. And it could be about saving money, it could be about efficiency, but it may also be about sustainability. And those things don't contradict each other, they can all come together.
GIS has been absolutely transformative. It's the ability to bring the art and the science of decision-making to the table. Let's say you're a retailer and you're thinking about expanding into new markets. You can look at, where do my customers live? Where do they shop? Where are my competitors? Combine all this data, and you start to see great options for store locations. So we can use GIS to look at how their business decisions might impact their bottom line.
Turn around, the mudslide's coming down.
SoCalGas has 20 million customers who depend on us day in and day out to provide them with gas safely.
It's believed that more than 100 homes have serious damage, and there's real concern that residents may be trapped.
Montecito was a major, major event. We brought our GIS team actually on site to Santa Barbara, and they were working directly with first responders, and we could manage it together as a collaborative team. By having all of our data on GIS, it allows different departments to go to the same portal. They can look at, are there environmental layers? Are there urban planning layers? Are there safety risk layers? So we can make much more holistic decisions in real time. That's what GIS has done for us.
HDR is a global engineering firm. We do a lot of infrastructure smartly designed with the environment in mind. Bridge design, water treatment facilities, architecture. Our clients wanted to see data in a way that was easy for everyone to understand. Taking the GIS that's typically seen in a horizontal space and into the vertical space, they can see project alternatives. It's really fun.
We can make hundreds, thousands iterations. Would there be more trees? How would that look? What about the volumes of the buildings, etc.? The decision makers can see how their money is spent, and the municipalities can see how their environment is developed. I think everybody wins.
I
IUCN is the International Union for the Conservation of Nature. One of the key roles of IUCN is to convene all the necessary voices making the decision about what they can protect and where they can protect it. And it neutralizes the conversation. It does not become, I am arguing with you about this point. It's about using the map as the neutral space to share perspectives. So GIS is really one of the most important tools that's going to help the world to implement the appropriate conservation actions.
We have a lot of working landscapes that can also be conservation landscapes.
That's what that gentleman said, using it as a neutral point to where we can all make decisions. And I think that's the key. Instead of just board goals, I want it to be to where you're not just holding on to the roller coaster. I want you to be at the operators panel. And I think with the new technology that's coming and the technology that's already here, it's more possible than ever. And it's exciting. And I'll be honest with you, I've had my back and forths with like, where can this possibly go? When my kids, you know, get older, and they grow up to be living in the town that we give them and turn over to them, it's like, now I feel optimistic about, but it's going to take us standing up, and it's going to take us being like, thanks for the data, we got it from here. And that's what I'm doing here. So I thought that was interesting, that little deep dive into kind of the backstory about where our comprehensive plan came from, where this came from. And it's all about how you look at it. It's about what we can do with it. And it's, you know, good things are on the horizon. I wanted to end on this Friday show with, there was a Facebook page that I came across, and it's called Carrie and Fox River Grove, The Younger Years. And I wanted to give a shout out to them. I just discovered this, actually. And I wanted to go through some pictures. Or the old bowling alley, Bowl Air. I have a matchbook from this, actually. Bowl Air Automatics. This was on 14 going in near Fox River Grove in Cary. Where the resale shop is now. So yeah, Cary had a bowling alley at once. And they had automatic pinsters. There was some discussion about the proposed building. This is West Main and Spring Street. Some homes. Oh, I remember that. There was a bank in here. This bank. I had forgotten all about this bank. And then right across the street was the Hostess store. The River Bend. We looked at that postcard the other show. Evening specials. Let's take a look. What can we go eat? Tasty fried chicken served family style with all the fixins. $4. They're practically giving that away. Our jumbo barbecue pizza or beef ribs, spaghetti, fish fry, fresh from the Fox. So it's a lawnmower company off of Jandis. A view from the ski hill, Cary, Illinois. Yeah, I wanted to give a shout out to them. I'll leave it at that picture. I see good things. And I wanted to that woman that was trying to save Cary and putting up the questions. You almost saw the moment right there when it slipped away. And we're bringing it back, as Pitbull says. Have a great weekend. Thank you for joining me for Voices Cary Live. Please email us at voicescary@proton.me and our comment below. And it's an absolute pleasure being here with you, wherever you may be. And have a wonderful weekend. We will see you on Monday.
You're confirmed at T-minus 10 seconds.
In counting, 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Reach for the sky.
Huh?
This town ain't big enough for the two of us.
What?
Somebody's poisoned the water hole.
It's busted.
Who are you calling busted, Buster? That's right. I'm talking to you, Sid Phillips. We don't like being blown up, Sid. Or smashed, or ripped apart.
We?
That's right. Your toys.
Play nice.